Blog Talk Radio.
Smart Sound.
Hello and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen, Studio A, and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, it's good to be back. How are you?
It's good. Now, I'm good to have back here for a while here. Yeah, and other than this heat, boy, I tell you, it's really beating people up. That humidity is a mountain out there, but there's, you know, a whole lot going in the city and with our big organizations and et cetera. I know you got a couple things on the platter there. Why don't you just go ahead and open it up, and, you know, the phone lines will be open. Anybody want to call in and talk in terms of what's happening, and I will report on some of the meetings and the situation involving, we'll do that at about the 15-minute mark, the Thurman Bevin situation, because I just left a meeting in North Minneapolis. But go ahead, Don, you got a couple things. Let's get them going and see if we can get any kind of response.
Yeah, and I am actually, while we're talking here, Mr. Edwards, I'm putting a post on social media to let people know that we're live on the air. That call-in number is 347-426-3904. Again, that call-in number to speak with Mr. Edwards and myself, Don Allen, is 347-426-3904. Hey, Mr. Edwards, I'm a little bit concerned locally here in the Twin Cities, Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul proper, regarding behind the frenzy, like a shark feeding, of this mental health that's taken a whole new – it's developed arms, legs, a body, torso, a head, everything. And now black people in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and those zip codes are the reason why they can't achieve the greatness they're meant to achieve is because of a mental illness. Now, granted, for someone, and I'm telling you this, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, I'm diagnosed as a veteran with PTSD and depression. I wear the thing around my neck. The little health alert thing the VA gave me, I wear it around my neck. So I'm not talking about this lightly or has someone outside looking in. You know, I was in the psych ward of the VA for a week. Okay, I know what that looks like and what that routine is. And so when I hear these people say that Minnesota, Minneapolis, especially North Minneapolis, Little Earth, Native Americans, the Somalis in the rivers, Cedar Riverside, you know, that years ago just used to be University of Minnesota students, but now it's the Somali community, and I hear the plumbing in there is horrendous. I got several students whose people live over there, and they're telling me every day, I can't believe it. But I hear people talking about the reason we're this way is because of mental illness. And I can't accept that. I says, being poor, being in poverty, not having enough to eat, you can sink into a depression, but depression and the mental illness part of it, anxiety and all the other stuff, wasn't the lead causal effect to start anything, okay? It was maybe the poverty, being poor, living in a poor neighborhood, and the things that happen around you in those situations, black-on-black crime. There's a lot of other factors. But now all of a sudden, and you as a historian, Mr. Edwards, God help me get my head right, because I don't understand this. But why the mental illness piece? I've been reading like crazy all these academic publishers in black academia. They're all on top of that. The black people are suffering from a mental health issue. Let's take away the economic development piece. Let's take away the housing piece. Let's take away the employment, which actually falls under the economic development piece. Let's take all that away, okay? And then look at this. I don't understand the system that this is coming from. I think of myself as looking at systems and organizational design, and I don't understand how this popped up ahead of a guy working 8 hours a day, going home, 40 hours, you know, and then working 40 hours a week, I should say, getting a paycheck and doing better each week. Each week doing better. That's respectful. That's integrity. That takes all those other areas, like you could slip in. When I was depressed, Mr. Edwards, quickly here, when I was depressed, I worked downtown at Cat Communications and Piper Jaffray Tower. Mm-hmm. For a whole week, I stayed in bed. I called my boss because I needed to take a break. Stayed in bed. I didn't know what was going on because as a black person, you know, I didn't want no one to label me with a mental illness. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to make the point for them because I hear people commenting that, why are you teasing people with mental health issues? Why are you and not understanding that they don't know me, but I let them know of me as much as I wanted them to know of me. You know, and then when I go in and say, yeah, I was diagnosed with this, this, and this at the VA, then they kind of back off. They ain't got nothing to say but call me, pull my head out of my ass, like a young lady said on Facebook to me today. Community stuff and this grant that came out, this RFP, I should say, for I think it's $2,500 for an individual, $25,000 for a individual or group, and then $75,000 for a system of groups to address
and
do something spectacular.
The recast that you're talking about, is that all
the recast?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay,
yeah,
I'm
recast,
looking at this.
Yeah.
I'm going, there's something wrong with this. So in the grant, in the PDF that I read it like three times, Mr. Edwards, because I couldn't believe anybody from an official organization would put out some BS like this. I said, no, they can't. Mm-hmm. No. I'm like shaking my head. I'm reading it. I'm saying, no. I'm reading it wrong. Let me go downstairs, get some water, come back up and read it again. So I read it again. Okay? You cannot pull off anything successful in North Minneapolis, Little Earth, or those other areas in 30 days. Number one. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Unless someone takes a trip to the Bahamas, it'll be successful with them. But number two, this particular recast grant, the $25,000 and the $75,000 is setting up for failure. And the reason why I say that, Mr. Edwards, is because say someone got the $75,000 and they wanted to go to 10 to 15 of the Fortune 500 companies, which are headquartered here in Minnesota, and ask them to hire 25 people from the community, okay, as a compensated work therapy program. The company pays them. They get some kind of benefits from the city of Minneapolis. I'm pretty sure that can be worked out. And some additional funding to fund benefits for these people, liability, van pickup. So they get to work. You got 10 Fortune 500 companies located here in the Twin Cities, or Minnesota, I should say, and they're going to hire people from these different zip codes. And so say that you've got the $75,000 and you set up that infrastructure. This grant is actually supposed to run for like a month. You're setting yourself up for failure because that's how much it probably would cost to set something like that up because that intense, that would have to run. You know, you need that almost every month for like, well, not every month, but at least a good substantial amount for a whole year to even kick this program off. And the reason why I say it hasn't been done or it can't be done or it's a setup for failure because if you look at the report online at the northsidefunders.com or .org, northsidefunders.org, their last report, it says that to take black people just in 55411, 55412, and I think a little in 55405, that's basically North Minneapolis, to get them out of poverty or that area out of poverty, you would have to get 7,000 people jobs.
Yeah, I think
7,000 people
that
would have.
Made that
yeah.
statement about 6 months ago. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Yep,
mm-hmm.
yep. And so I'm looking at that again because the mental health piece is not matching the economic piece, and the economic piece has fell into the mental health trap.
Yep.
So now jobs are locked away. The education
mm-hmm.
is locked away. I'm talking about 18 plus, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All these options for people to go out and work diligently with rigor to make sure that people are employed, people that look like you and I, Mr. Edwards, younger or older, have employed or an income, period. So this whole thing is trash. The system is trash, it's crashed, it's mass. Because now, back in when you were running things, Mr. Edwards, at these agencies, this would have been a time where you guys would have already stepped in, Urban League, NAACP, whoever else, and made a reset happen quickly with some bully pulpit, okay? But now people look at the Urban League, St. Paul, and I mean, not St. Paul, they're close, Minneapolis, NAACP. Yeah, that's right. And St. Paul, NAACP, and Minneapolis, NAACP. Nakima Levy Pound, Dr. Nakima, Reverend Dr. Nakima Levy Pound, who has a whole other agenda. And God bless her soul. She can have another agenda. That's what she's interested in. It's obvious to us that jobs, employment, economic gains, housing, homeless school children, homeless veterans will not be addressed by this person ever. Okay? And she's made that clear. So she's in her lane, I guess. As we say, Mr. Edwards, we stay in our lane. So, again, I'm looking at this. I'm going, something is wrong. I haven't figured it all out, but I'm getting there. But why mental health that our community is like it is because of mental health and not the focus on economic development, and why the Gimme Grammy grant that are RFPs that are coming out for little to nothing that will just appease a few folks but not cure the problem. You know, that's where I'm at today, Mr. Edwards. That's why I had to get off.
Yeah, well, now let me just try to answer. First of all, I think it's only fair. Is there anyone holding on the line? Because phone line's open. Give that phone number again. I'd like to hear from any listeners that have, you know, maybe some differences or were even paying attention. But go ahead. Run the number through again.
Okay, yeah, that number again, the phone lines are open, 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, the phone lines are wide open. Give us a call.
All right, Don, let me just respond to your very first hypothesis, if you will. And we've talked about it on this program for 6 or 7 years, so it's not like we haven't talked about it. And we've had, and sometimes folks have called in and et cetera. But as I've said for the last year or so, it's really all about money. It's about the semblance of prosperity in a community. And what you have to understand, though, and I think you do, if not, you need to get your law books, is that it is an easier method when you start talking about mental health and things like that to intern you, to put you away.
Mm-hmm.
It is much more difficult to be exonerated for whatever the allegations are against you if the system can show that you got a mental health problem. And we talked about this a number of years ago. We were kind of bad-mouthed. People talked in terms that was just a bunch of crazy things, folks saying that you didn't have the academic background. Okay, didn't have the academic background. But you can certainly read the figures. You can read the research and et cetera. Bottom line, though, it's all about money. It's all about money, and the system is making a whole lot more money than anybody is being told. But what it does is it makes it easier for civil internment, if you will. That's what's happening. It makes it easier to push aside social matters and social issues, starting with education. You know, we go back, I go back many, many years when we used to talk in terms of the miseducation of the Negro, okay? And people don't even want to talk about that. But I'm telling you, from my knowledge of what's happening, the different entities that are out here talking about it, you left out a word, though, that goes now along with mental health, and it's trauma. Actually, what you were talking about is trauma. Because what happened was the system... about 6-7 months ago, start introducing the word trauma. And they started using it at the University of Minnesota. I keep saying, and folks never want to touch it, that Dr. Cicchetti is one of the best in quote-unquote the mental management of the communities of color, particularly the African-Americans. So now we talk in terms of the trauma. Well, black folks had trauma when, unfortunately, they were being put on the slave ships and over half of them were being thrown in the Atlantic Ocean and the other half to that reached the shores of the United States, as it was later referred to initially was a British colony, were the victims, the long-term and the final victims of trauma, because you were born a slave, you lived a slave, you died a slave. And boy, that was a lot of trauma when you talk in terms that it, later on in 1777, when they talked in terms of Constitution Hall and et cetera, we never quite understood that we were never seen in the Constitution as a whole human being. We were three-fifths. We're still three-fifths, except when it comes time to allocate the money to deal with an acute problem that that we are, quote-unquote, being characterized as having, and that is in the combination of mental health. But the trauma is a utilization posture, if you will, a utilization of a statute that makes it more easier to intern, to put you under lock and key. Maybe we'll get a call from him, as an example, the man that, that knows the ground, if you will, has talked many times on these programs over the last 6 years or so about what he saw in the county, what he saw happening to our young children, and et cetera. We have not had the kind of advocates at, in the legislature here in the state of Minnesota. God knows what we have right now in Washington, D.C., even from the Black Congressional Caucus, because they have so many things on their platter that they're fighting for as it pertains to the survival of the sons and daughters of the African. And by the way, just on that note, that will continue to create trauma, if you will, and create mental health problems, is that the next move, as soon as the president gets his Supreme Court justice in, it consolidates that 5-4 majority, maybe even 6-3. You can believe it. You heard it here. People can differ if they want. I talk about it on my TV program the last couple of weeks. They're getting ready to move on the Civil Rights Statute and the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and 1965. And these folks understand and know, because they helped create it, that which brings about trauma, which then leads to mental deficiencies, anger, and et cetera, et cetera. So, Don, this has been well planned, if you will. Unfortunately, our institutions have been dying on the vine. It was no accident that for a brief second there, you forgot that the St. Paul no longer has an Urban League. St. Paul Urban League was one of the quietest departing organizations I've ever seen in my life in Black America. I mean, as I said on this program 4 years ago, is that Urban Leagues, no matter where they're at, what you may think about them, Urban Leagues do not go out of business. Went out of business in St. Paul, Minnesota. This is a experimental capital of the United States. We've said this, I've said this on this program for over a half a decade, that we are an experimental laboratory. And these folks are experimenting on us, and they have got us rolling downhill, and I just don't know if there are any pegs on the side of the hill or on the side of the mountain that we can grab a hold of and continue, quote-unquote, some presence in the society. But to your specific question, you know, it's about preparation to enhance. I hate to say it like that, to enhance, if you will, and to further genocide. And we are on a genocidal path as the sons and daughters of the African. So it's just as clear as that. We, you know, the people can call and can have long debates and et cetera. But bottom line, you had said earlier and off the mic conversation, you were watching CNN. Como, who is now looked at as one of the bright new white boys, was talking about race, and it's set to be talking about the Mexican. You know, nobody talks about the African American. You know, and I have to say it to, in all deference and respect to my red brothers who fought historically and had their numbers decreased by almost 70-some percent as it pertains to their population. But nobody came here in bondage except us, the sons and daughters of the African, okay? I say it again, I repeat it again, Mr. Allen. Our people came here as slaves, lived as slaves, died as slaves, and will ever, forever be slaves as it pertains to the Constitution of the United States. I would challenge anybody to call it and talk in terms of why the three-fifths within the Constitution was never repealed. Never repealed. Thurgood Marshall, God bless him, tried to send that signal, but he was a lonely beacon on a nine-member body called the Supreme Court of the United States. And over on the other side of the Capitol there, you had, quote-unquote, the Congress of the United States, 435 men and women with a very small sprinkling of African Americans and an even smaller of Asians and Native Americans and et cetera. So that's what it is. But I hope the phone line's open. I would like to hear some full engagement. I'd like to hear some people give us their thoughts. But I know it's hot. I know it's humid here in the Twin Cities and in other places. People are watching baseball. The World Soccer has been completed to the extent that France and Croatia will face off for the World Soccer the title, if you will, in a couple of days. But your points are well made, Don, and serious. And I can tell you, let me just say this to you as a person that does analyze and et cetera. I can hear the troubled emotion in your voice, Don. And I'm in studio with you.
There's a problem.
We're on the mics together, but I can hear it. And I have a certain arrogance, if you will. I don't apologize for it. I have never, at this point, knock on wood or anything else, I have been blessed as a 79-year-old African-American that I have never suffered depression or anything resembling mental health. But I'm blessed, okay? I mean, it's blessed with regards to not having that. It's a combination of a lot of things, including your DNA and et cetera. That doesn't make me head and shoulders above anybody. It's just that I have been a lucky black man, okay? Pure and simple. But again, is any calls coming in? If not, I will move to a meeting of importance to the community because of the trauma and stress that I have seen in the last couple of weeks since the 23rd day of June. Do we have any calls, though? We want to take them right now.
No callers right now.
Let me say this. I just came from a meeting at Jenny Lind Elementary School, 50th and DuPont. It was actually, this was a second meeting held in regards to the trauma that is going on. This was by the Blevins family. Now, this is a two-compartmentalized family. The Blevins family, which is the last name of the young man shot killed by the police on the 23rd day of June. And then there is the Moore family, because the father, Thurman Moore, is a Moore. He is a member of the Moore family. The father, Isaac Moore, now deceased, a great man, a beautiful person, he and his wife, and et cetera. That funeral will be at 11 o'clock on Saturday at 1119 Morgan Avenue North, Holistic Church, and et cetera. But I attended a meeting this evening, and I attended a meeting yesterday evening at the Urban League. Basically the same number, but a little, maybe about 48, 49 people. More of a white crowd this evening at Jenny Lane School, if you will. But still there to hear the grieving of the Blevins family. Let me be clear on this, for anybody may decide to call in. I know both families. I was present, knew the father when the 31-year-old, now deceased, Thurman Blevins was born, if you will. As I said, his father, Thurman Moore, know that entire family, okay? And so it was kind of sad. Just about an hour or so ago, to sit and watch such a young group of young human beings who have been just devastated by the death of their loved one, if you will. At the same time, a number of people said this evening in this meeting at Jenny Lane is that this is something that just continues, 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 and continues, and I'm afraid my friend, that there's really no end, if you will. Now, that's what causes trauma, which then leads to mental health, anger, frustration, and et cetera. But tomorrow night, I want to be clear on this, and then we have our listening audience here in the Twin Cities. Tomorrow night, the DCA, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, will come in. This is a meeting that is being pulled together really at the basically really the direction of the governor through our a young man that has been on this program before, and that is the young man that is the executive director of the what is it the Council on African Culture or whatever, Mr. Justin Terrell. They will be serving food. VJ Smith of Mad Dads has brought in the food. The food is being paid for by the city. Brother Smith will, and et cetera. But the real purpose of the meeting tomorrow, and again, our phone lines are open for anybody that's interested in asking any questions. The DCA will come, and they will explain to the community how the process works, but they will not talk about the case. Now, that doesn't make a lot of sense. That's actually being disrespectful to the African-American community. But the reason
Mr. Edward, I don't mean to cut you off real quick, but I just have to ask you a question real quick. You just said that the BCA will come in and explain the process, but not the case, right? Oh, they've been lying to folks on social media. Okay, good. I'm glad I know that.
Oh, definitely lying.
Wow.
Because that is all firmed up. And Mr. Terrell, if he calls, will have to confirm that. Okay. It was in the Minneapolis Star Tribune a couple of times. I was aware of it even long before that. Let's back to tomorrow night at Weber Community Center in Weber Park, okay? That's at like 43rd and Bryant in North Minneapolis. So the BCA said, we'll come in, we'll meet with the community, black, white. We will explain to you people what the process is. Now, the reason that the discussion about process came up, because some individuals have made allegations against, quote-unquote, reputation of the current chief of police, Madera Arredondo, which were totally incorrect and et cetera. Now, on these programs, the Don and Ron program, in November and December of 2015 and January of 2016 and et cetera, we talked in terms of the role that some African-American leaders played in handling over all responsibility to the county attorney and at the same time pressuring the city government at that time under former mayor Betsy Hodges, that all investigative authority in any police or officer involved shooting involved in the Minneapolis Police Department be turned over to the BCA. Now, we had discussions on that. I wrote a number of articles in the Spokesman Recorder and et cetera. People basically indicated that we were off the reservation, whatever the hell that's supposed to mean. And that was a good idea. Well, and by the way, my phone is texting and et cetera. People are literally trying to get through pretending that they don't know we're on the air. But anyways, so what happened, the county attorney said to us clearly and concisely that he would make the determination, okay? There would be no grand jury, okay? And so that's what happened. The two white officers were not charged. And in the case of Jamar Clark, we went on about our business, quote unquote. We then had the Castillo situation in St. Paul 2 years ago. The county attorney over there did it a different way. But it still did not afford a jury of 12 true and honest jury members to convict the police officer Yanis, a Mexican American. Okay, so we had that. Then last summer, about this time last summer, we had a Somali police officer named Mohammed Nord in a situation in a call in South West Minneapolis shot and killed a Australian female national. And he was charged. He was charged. Now, before a jury, he didn't. And if you look closely at his documentation and et cetera, it was quite clear that he made the determination. Now we're faced with this weapons situation, if you will. And is that you in the background, Don, or is that the NSA? So in the case of what is now on the docket, one of the things, and it was me that said it at this meeting this evening, I just felt compelled to speak up as a person who has the knowledge and the understanding, because I felt so badly for the Blevins family. Number one, they don't have an attorney. A young man tried to convince me that he was a representative of the NAACP Minneapolis and that they were getting an attorney or had an attorney. I asked him what the name of the attorney was. He couldn't tell me. I shook his hand, thanked him. I also told him this, and this is an exclusive now on the Don and Ron program on a Wednesday night. I also suggested to the family that they needed to acquire an attorney. By the way, so there's no additional confusion, the other side of the family, attorney for Thurman Moore, the father of Thurman Blevin, has obtained an attorney, known as Judge Hatcher. She was involved in the Castillo case, okay? They won a nice settlement. They did not prevail, of course, on the criminal charges, but they won with regards to civil damages. Judge Hatcher and a white attorney by the name of Robert Bennett split basically $1 million. One of the reasons that Bennett was involved, though he didn't have nothing to do but just, you know, be the attorney of record, is because Judge Hatchett does not have a license to practice law in the state of Minnesota, Don. And so I think you know what that means. Do you know what that means when you don't have a license to practice law? In other words, you have to go get somebody else to be first chair, what we call first chair. Okay?
Yeah.
And so in the case of what is happening right now, the Moore family has retained the legal services of, quote-unquote, Judge Hatcher and whoever the attorney with a license to practice law in the state of Minnesota can bring to the table. In the meanwhile, unfortunately, as we speak tonight on this program, the Blevins family has not been provided with any of the consulate in which someone has gone out and gotten them an attorney. Now, their spokesperson, who I saw in a press conference the other day on the steps of City Hall, is one Mel Reeves. You know Mr. Reeves. Mr. Reeves was very much involved in the death and the situation of T.T. Franklin, Terrence Franklin, which, by the way, will be decided, the court will decide, as we have reported on this program, that if they will take the case, if not, they will send the case back to the trial judge and the city of Minneapolis. We have to settle or go on trial. And I can tell you, brother, and we don't even have enough time on tonight's program because we're concentrating on what we're concentrating on. If folks do not want to see this case go to trial, it is outrageous what they did to Terrence Franklin in that basement as they blew his head off. Okay, so, and we talked about that. So that about it, the country, across the world, was talked about on this program. So, bottom line, there will be a third meeting tomorrow. And actually, there have been other meetings which have been closed at City Hall to the only particular members of the public, if you will. And they know I know who they are. But tomorrow night, the BCA will come in. They will tell you what the process is, but they will not discuss the case. Now, one of the features is not only the body cam, but also the dashboard cams, Don, of the two squad cars that came into the alley right after the police officers had, finalized the discharge of their guns into Mr. Blevins. We have no information as a community. No one knows, the police know, et cetera, how many times Mr. Blevins was shot, where he was shot, if you will. if he had a gun, if he didn't have a gun, if you will, why did the police chase him from the corner of 48th and Camden when he was in the company of his significant other and their baby, when there could have been a possibility of a hostage situation? The police, in my estimation, this is just merely my estimation, they thought that this African-American had taken a white woman and a child hostage, and they were so enraged that they violated their own protocol and did not wait for backup, began the chase, and driven by their anger and outrage at what they perceived to be the conduct of this African-American, blew him away. Okay? So for anyone that wants to call and et cetera and ask us any questions, we're laying it out to you tonight. It's a damn shame. It's sad. And the question that I asked the meeting tonight to at least pose to the county attorney, and that is, will you take this to a grand jury, or will you make the same kind of determination you made back in the Jamar Clark situation? And really that you made in the case of Muhammad Norton. If we got any calls down, let's get them in. We don't want anybody to think that we'll keep them off the air. You still there, Don?
Yes, here. I am here.
Yeah, I don't know what
happened.
We
have
okay.
No phone calls. Yeah.
Is
yeah,
that right?
I'm looking in the queue.
Any questions
I'm
on what I just
queue.
Laid out?
No, it was very interesting what you laid out, because that is regarding Judge Hatchett and having someone for the first chair, but also the peculiarness of why the Council of Minnesota's African Heritage is having this, you already said it's by the governor, but having this sore way to talk about the process. Is that what the black community really needs to hear right now, is the process of
not
the BCA?
Really. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's a waste of anyone's time to even go, because this investigation will take a long time. And per the rules already written in black ink, you will not get anything till the investigation is over, period.
That's correct. That's correct. But
I don't understand that
community should go for no other reason to let the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension know that they are aware. Let me tell you why I say that. Because the director of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension actually turned out to be ticked off that the announcement was made in Saturday's edition, this past Saturday's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune, that this meeting was going on, because I don't know what the heck they were going to do. Maybe they were just going to invite a couple of white neighbors living in the community right around Aldridge, Brian, Colfax, Emerson, and Camden, and Lindale. I'm not sure, but the superintendent, actually his title is superintendent of BCA, was not helpful and was not very happy with that. But he went ahead and told the council. Now, like I said, they'll be serving food, and then the BCA will tell you what it is that you should understand, as if you are a 101, you know, civic class, and then maybe a Q&A, but there will not be a Q&A for to do with the incident.
That's not even
we
right.
We haven't called yet, Don. I'm just surprised no one has called and said, I mean, I know it's hot or not, but most people are in their cribs enjoying the air conditioning. I am really surprised that we have not heard a single call, according to what you're saying.
Yeah, I have the dashboard open, and the phone lines are wide open, and we are not getting. I even picked up the studio phone here and dialed the number. Hey, here we go. We have a call.
All right, let's get them in.
Call
you. We're wide open here.
You're live on the air. Yeah. Oh, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Gentlemen.
Yes.
Hey,
sir.
Gentlemen. This is Mr.
Well, Jim, how you doing? Good to hear your voice, brother. Good that we are, you know, the minds are open. What's your question? What can we do for you? What's your observation?
Well, you know, I mean, this you know, this whole thing with the Twin Cities and disparities and policemen, I mean, in Minnesota, it's really going, you know, it's going backwards so fast that it's hard to know what to say. And I was particularly distressed about, you know, the shooting of, you know, Mr. Blevins, because, you know, I grew up with that family, both the Blevins and the Moores. We all went to Bethesda together. Many years.
Okay.
All of them. But it's so startling to pick up the paper and to see, you know, these grieving people that are so close to you. You know, it makes you realize that this is really getting on our doorstep. It makes you realize that, I mean, yeah, of course, Philando and, I mean, all these things are hurtful. But it just is another level of pain when you've grown up with these people and you look at the paper and you see this, and it's almost like it's like we're becoming numb to these things. These things are happening so much, and we're getting the same rhetoric over and over and over, that it's really trying, you know, I believe, on the community. I mean, I know that they're trying to do some healing type things, but I mean, at some point, we have to stop the madness. I mean, we can't always heal. You know,
let me say this, Brother M, for the purpose of the continuity of timeline. What you just said was expressed by a young man that would, let's say, would be 50 years your junior, okay? Same exact words by a young man who's probably in his 20s.
Wow.
Same exact observations and et cetera. It's not anything anybody told me. I was sitting there. I was watching the community. Mm. In fact, so we're clear, Mr. Allen, with anybody. It was the commentator and the journalist, R. Edward, who suggested to the family, number one, they needed to get an attorney as soon as they could. Mm-hmm. It's been since the 23rd of June that their loved one died. And they needed to force the hand of the county attorney to determine if he's going to send it to a grand jury or if he's going to play the game that he did and a couple of others, and that he will make the determination. Now, some of our leadership has gotten awful quiet here in the last 10 or 12 days, Don.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the people that were very much out front in November of 2015 have all of a sudden gotten quiet, though we had, you know, we had a near riot that night. If it had not been for the actions and the respect that was held for Commander Charles Adams II, 34-year veteran of the Minneapolis Police Department, if it had not been for he and his civilian unit, if you will, we would have had a full-scale problem out there, because police had called for reinforcement, but they conducted themselves in an appropriate manner. But it was because of the presence, first and foremost, of Chief Medero Arredondo. And there's been nothing approaching the respectful credit that should be given to him for the way that he handled the situation. Not only that night, but later on Sunday at 3 o'clock that Sunday in front of the 4th Precinct, where, you know, Nakima Levy Pounds and others, you know, really kind of called him out to some degree about, you know, the conduct and the actions of his officers, but they were respectful to him. And really, there's not been the kind of expression of respect and appreciation for what Chief Arredondo did, and also what Commander Charles Adams II did, if you will. I mean, I find it amazing, and I hear it in your voice, Em, I hear it in Mr. Allen's voice, that, like you said, I mean, we've reached a point where we're just kind of numb. And it was said tonight at this meeting at Jenny Lind that by a aunt of the deceased, where she said that we've reached a point where we just go on about our business and go to the McDonald's and get a hamburger and just go off until it personally affects us. And she admitted and she confirmed that she was one of those, until her favorite nephew was gunned down on the 23rd day of June in North Minneapolis. And it's amazing to hear, because in the case of the young man and yourself, there's, let's say, a 50-year difference. In the case of her and you, there's probably about a 30. And Mr. Allen has said it at the top of this program, talking about mental health and trauma and et cetera. And I'm saying these people are beating us down, man. They're beating us down.
Yeah. You know, you made an interesting point too. There's kind of an undercurrent of something that's happening with these type of events now, and that's, you know, the future of our current Hennepin County attorney. Now, I understand that, there is an election that's coming up, and that maybe the voters can have a say on who holds that office coming up. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
That is absolutely correct. He will have a severe test in the general election. There's no primary in the general election in November. He has a challenger. You know, he lost the endorsement at the county convention. He's shocked. Our county attorney was shocked when he lost the. It was a hung convention and et cetera. What I'm hearing is yes, sir. He's in the fight for his life, if you will. In fact, he would like to move.
And we have another caller, John.
We have another call. We don't want to keep you because we've got, what, Don, 13 minutes left. Let's get the caller in. Go ahead, caller.
Go ahead. Yeah. Caller, you're live on
air. Oh, good evening, Ron and Don. This is Lisa calling in.
Mm-hmm. Hey, how are you doing, dear?
How are you doing?
Well, okay. What question?
One thing I wanted to say. I have one very important question, but I wanted to say something. But one thing first, I want to say that I have so much respect for our current chief, Arredondo, at this moment, and because there's a history with him in our city and holding our police officers accountable at one point. So a lot of people don't know that history. So maybe people need to do their research and then they'll show a little bit more respect for him. So that's one thing I wanted to say. Another thing I wanted to say, talking back to the Jamar Clark incident in the past, you know, the people in the community, we fought for these body cameras. So we want to make sure that we hold the police officers accountable and the whole department accountable when it comes to these body cameras. We want to see what happened, what took place, because we have a constitutional right to bear arms, and at the same time, we want to make sure that the police is following their procedure not to be shooting people in their back. So we question the procedures of the police officers. We question their history, the background. As we know, the officer who shot Jamar Clark had a past, had a history. So we want to make sure that our chief is looking at these officers who have a history and get them out of our streets where we have a high crime area because they're tempted. We can't have a gang type mentality type police officers in a high crime area. We need to get rid of these type of officers from our department. So I wanted to. So that talks about the transparency, and I wanted to say about these political candidates that's running. I mean, I think in August we have to make a decision. What they call it, primaries, I don't know. But we have to make a decision. So what's the platform of some of these politicians? Because a lot of them get elected on this justice-type platform, so they need to be the first ones out, not political leaders, but these political candidates out here running for office that want our vote, that's switching up the game, as we can see that's taking place right now. And my question, this is the last thing I wanted to say. Did Muhammad Noor, did he go through grand jury, and was there a decision made out of the grand jury or what?
Nope. Let me just lay this out. We have about, Mr. Allen, about 11 minutes. Let's go back over because the Muhammad Noor situation is already a different narrative than what is happening with the two white officers, Kelly and Schmidt. First of all, Muhammad Noor did the best thing that he could have ever done, and that was that he never gave a statement the night of the shooting, number one, so they could not use that against him, twist it, and et cetera. And so the response to that by the county attorney that we talked about, the current county attorney, was that he brought in 50 police officers, only one, was at the scene at the time that Justine was shot and gave a statement. Muhammad Noor did not give a statement, nor was Muhammad Noor called before the grand jury, because Muhammad Noor's attorneys had clearly indicated to the county attorney that their client would take the Fifth Amendment, and that's what he's doing. In fact, they may not hear from Muhammad Noor until he may or may not decide to take the stand. They can't make him take the stand. And that's what I was saying.
Wasn't he advised on the scene not to make a statement? I mean, he was immediately advised, and that's pretty much like a common practice for them to not make a statement. They've been in a situation before.
He already knew that it would not be wise because he also realized that he was being undermined and attacked by some of the police officers that were already there after the shooting. This is when
we have citizens that are aware of their Miranda rights. So we clearly have people that are conscious of aware of not giving statements.
He exercised that.
Okay.
And he had the right.
One thing I want to say about the mental health part is when it comes to some of the things that are taking place in our community, the trauma comes as a reaction to what's taking place. So some of these shootings and all this stuff, all these injustices in our community, that is causing a reaction, and that reaction is a mental response. And so it can be good or bad. You know, some people that rise up and want to help the community, and you have some people that want to get revenge and those who are affecting or oppressing the community. So we want to be mindful of all of that. We have a lot of mental health issues in our community. So I want to, and people who
Lisa, let me ask you a question real quickly here on that statement. Should mental health be the focus? Should the mental health thing be the focus? Versus
of course, we have
education.
Traumatic
syndrome. Why should that be the focus?
Why should it be the focus?
Why
because
should mental health be the focus
people
of the Black community?
Well, it should not only be the focus in the Black community. It should be the focus in relation to economics. When you're poor, then how do you respond to that?
Okay, you answered my question perfectly. Mr. Edwards and M, this is what I've been saying, okay, what I said at the start of the show. And I'm not trying to get on you or anything, Lisa. You just gave me a good example for what I was saying earlier.
Because
we're friends, I know you, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, what we're doing now is we're putting the cart before the horse. So say that you got those 7,000 people in North Minneapolis sustainable jobs or jobs that they can sustain themselves and look and see a vision instead of just 24 hours, okay? Mental health might be a factor, but it would be a very small factor. When you, like Mr. Edwards just said and made the point elegantly, is that when you put mental health out there like that, we don't make no money. You immediately get put into a system that says we're going to give you $61, $81 a month. We assign you a case manager, but we're going to have to hire 40 more white females at $75,000 a year. But we're not going to hire anybody from your community. You know, I'm a veteran. They sent me to the workforce center, even though I have a full-time job. And part of the program for me going to school, they sent me to the workforce center to talk to them about my experience. So I was thinking that I'm going to go there and talk to someone, you know, someone at least with my age, my achievements, a peer of my excellence, not to be arrogant, but a peer of my excellence. I go into the room, the 23-year-old white girl, and she's quizzing me like I done did something wrong. I ain't supposed to have one. I said, hey, hold up. First of all, you don't know me. Second of all, you don't know your job or what the hell you're doing. Third of all, I need to speak to your manager or the person in charge here right away. Now, this was in St. Paul on University Avenue in 55104. She says, well, I'm normally not at this office. I'm at the Blaine office, and turned red as a beet. And,
well, can I please say
something? I'm like, wait a minute. Go ahead.
One thing Mr. Edwards say is that as a community, we are being experimented. And so when we throw this word mental health out there, we have to keep in mind that we got UROC over there that is doing these tests based on this umbrella of mental health. So if we want to go back and understand, if we understand our history, what history tells us is that they've already tried to label us all as one-fifth or whatever. we're not
retarded,
or we're crazy.
Retarded.
Or
they've
already done that. So we want to be careful that we don't repeat that. So we want to make sure that we identify exactly what mental health kind of we're looking at. And I say that because I have a history. I've studied. I have about 12 credits from a bachelor's degree in psychology. So I understand this. So we want to be careful when people just throw that word out when they have not even studied in that area. So I want to say that.
I think, you know, this is and I think the big thing is, like, you know, like Ron and Don has been saying, is the trauma to the area.
Trauma.
I mean, kids see this. You know, kids know the family. Kids grew up with these individuals in North Minneapolis are real to them. Okay, everything that's happening is real. They know that. And so what we're talking about is the real trauma, and that's what has to be really dealt with from the standpoint of someone that really knows, you know, the effect of these things on communities, you know, because it affects each one of us. I mean, it's a huge thing, and I don't know how you do a mass treatment, but we have to have an understanding, you know, from my perspective, and I've been in the mental health field for many years,
as to
how we can really address this. And I think we need to.
Well, there are some answers, and if you've been in the mental health field for many years, you know that you have some answers to that question.
Yes.
Answers.
The problem is he's retired. I mean, you know, he fought the battle for many, many, many years. He didn't retire because he got tired. It's the law required. But let me say this to us, because
you have to pass that baton.
Yeah. Well, let me tell y'all this, because all three of you are on basically the same page. Very quietly, and it only came about because the business page of the Minneapolis Star Tribune 2 Sundays ago decided to glorify it. There was a reason. Not only do you have U-Rock sitting there, okay, but there was a reason. And, you can have a great appreciation of this in the final minute. It is the reason that in the great new edifice called Thor Constructions Building, which is now being managed by Target, that over one-third of the square space is the Hennepin County Department of Corrections, starting with their probation office. Now, wasn't that quite an interesting design? That's right. The Corrections Department of Hennepin County has taken over almost one-third of all the space in that nice new building that's sitting there on the corner of Plymouth and Penn, in a situation in which basically there were no black workers. And there are definitely no black workers, and you know this, Lisa, there are no black workers at all that are doing anything on Penn and Olsen Highway. It's interesting.
But we do have black board members that is overseeing that project, and we also have the Minneapolis Urban League
What black board member? Who are you talking about?
I stood out there at that construction site asking them for where the black employees were. And at that point, at that moment, the president of the Urban League came out, and we had a conversation. We talked about the hiring there, and he mentioned that he was on the board overseeing something in relation to that construction. So specifically what he was talking about, maybe you guys know that, but that's what he said.
I already know. Well, why don't you do this? Why don't you ask the county? Go to Alex Tittle at the county. We had him on a couple weeks ago. Ask him to provide you with the latest workup document that talks in terms of what the workforce was for that entire area and the workforce for the poor Empire Building. Yeah.
Well, I think the construction is separate from the service that's being put there. So that's the contract. They must have contracted.
What services?
For
what
that
services
property.
Are you talking about? No, these are two different services. What Hennepin
County is providing, they must have did a contract with Thor to lease that space.
But don't you find it odd that one third of the county space is for corrections? that bother you?
I find it odd that everything in that corner is Hennepin County.
17 seconds.
Yeah. All right. Thanks,
all
Lisa.
Right.
All right. Take us in.
Yes.
Thank you, Brother M. Appreciate
seconds.
It, man. Okay.
Right.
All right. Take us on home, Don. Interesting program.